brother.
Oh,
what's up?
This is a groovy party, man.
Yeah, I brother, like,
dig it.
Stop. Right on.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah.
Time now for the Empowerment Hour, the hottest show on Saturday mornings in Jacksonville on Praise 107.9. And now, here's your host on the Empowerment Hour, Dr. Richard Danforth, president of the Jacksonville Urban League, Jarman Leitner, president of First Thursday, and the producer and host, W. Larry Williams, CEO of Anchor Multicultural Communications Company.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Empowerment Hour. This is Larry Williams, your co-host, along with Dr. Richard Danforth, the president of Jacksonville Urban League, and Jarman Leitner, president of Harvest Mental Health Services. Welcome, guys. Happy Saturday. Happy Saturday to our listeners. It's another beautiful day to be alive and well. Thank God for another 24 hours to live. Hey, guys, what's going on in your lives and in Jacksonville? There's so many things that's happening around Jacksonville. But, Jarman, what's happening over on your side of town?
Yes, I just wanted to say happy first Saturday in December to everyone. Just excited for the Christmas season as we are approaching the Christmas season and celebrating the birth of Jesus Christ. And so I'm just excited for another day to share. Everything is well on this end. My children are doing well, man. I'm excited about this change in the weather too. So we're getting out a little bit, more to get some cool air.
there you go. Well, fresh air is good right now because of how COVID is impacting us and the fact that it continues to spike in across the world, but more importantly here in Jacksonville and in the state of Florida. Dr. Danforth, what's going on your side of town?
On my side of town, well, right now I'm downtown Jacksonville, and it's sort of a little cloudy here, but the weather warmed up. We had sweaters and coats earlier in the week, and now I have just a long sleeve shirt. It's just beautiful weather down here. But I think this would be a good time, guys, to just send a shout out to Dr. Green, our superintendent. You all heard that great news, Jarman.
She was named the Florida Superintendent of the Year. So congratulations to DCPS Superintendent Dr. Diana Green on such an accomplishment.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're so proud of her and that accomplishment. And her team. And her team makes her the superintendent of the year in Florida. We all know that it takes a team, it takes a village to accomplish anything. And so congratulations to her. And on that same deal, we're going to probably hear a little bit more about what it takes to become the superintendent of the year in our education segment later on in the deal. But Dr. Danforth, what else is going on in your world?
Well, Larry, you know that many people continue to suffer as a result of this COVID-19, either unemployed, and there's so many people that are in line to lose their homes, as well as businesses. And we see that the Jacksonville Bar Association received a little over $5 million to help homeowners there are about to lose their homes, unable to pay their mortgages. So a homeowner can receive up to $5,000. And of course, a commercial business type could receive up to $10,000. The window for applications open on Thursday. So if you're interested, call the Jacksonville Bar Association.
Bar Association. Okay, so there's some relief out there, folks. If you're looking, if you're having challenges with your mortgages and or your rent, there's some help there. And, you know, take advantage of it.
Absolutely.
You know, but, you know, at least file for it, even if you don't receive it. It's always good to be in a position where, you know, someone is offering help, and especially during this time of the year. You know, this is the holiday season that we've entered into. And you know, I want to echo John's comments, you know, hey, happy holidays and season's greetings and all that good stuff. But let's not forget about, you know, what the Christmas is all about, and you know, sort of plan our holidays accordingly. As you can see, based on what we had occur after this Thanksgiving get together, where folks determined that they had to go somewhere and travel. Yes. Now we're seeing the post Thanksgiving surge, Jamin, and looking at, for the first time, I think Florida exceeds 1 million folks that have been infected with COVID-19.
Yes, yes. Over a million positive cases in the state of Florida. Infections in long-term care facilities are now a huge concern, as well as the number of hospitalizations. So we're seeing just, again, the effects of not social distancing and not wearing our mask and having huge gatherings where, you know, we are in close proximity to one another. I've met several people who have said they have been asymptomatic, and the only way they knew that they had even had the virus was because they donated blood and they tested for the antibodies. So it is happening, and we have to be cautious. We have to, you know, be wise. I know, Larry, I was considering a dance class for my daughter, you know, for a little bit, and to see. And I went just to see if they had any procedures implemented, and there were none. And so I said, well, I no, we can't sign her
up. You can dance in front of the TV.
Yeah, what happened to virtual classes and that sort of thing?
Well, yeah, well, you know, if the class was small enough, it's not the same. If the class would have been small enough and they were wearing masks, and, you know, we would have considered that. But so
Jama,
we have to be safe.
Yeah, Jama, you said that it's over a million cases in Florida now. How many? What is the population in Florida? I understand around 20?
Around 21.5 million cases in Florida, and as you mentioned that.
That's 21.5 population.
Yeah, in Florida, right. The population in Florida is around 21.5 million.
Okay, so what percentage of that, if it's a million cases?
Look, you, I'm not.
0.11%. Right? That's 1.1%. You know, and you know, the thing of it is that. We were forewarned and are being forewarned that, you know, these doses, I mean, that the first initial doses are intended to go to essential workers and frontline people, nurses and doctors who, you know, have to take care of folks when they do contract the virus. So, you know, there's now, you know, as the virus gets nearer to distribution, folks are starting to claim.
Yeah,
you know, that they should be provided the virus. And you know, sooner or later, we're going to get to the point, and we all know this, and at least if we didn't know it, we should have known it, is that, you know, folks, if the virus is, if the efficacy rate, which is the effectiveness of the virus, is 90% plus and it's passed all the mustard tests, then folks with resources are going to try to, you know, get in line ahead of the workers. And I think that's a bad thing. But getting that out to the seniors and those that are most likely to be infected, adversely affected by the virus, is the most important thing right now.
And you're talking about the vaccinations, right, Larry, that are going to be distributed. Okay. And I believe it was reported that about 500,000 to a million vaccinations are set to be distributed in Florida. And again, the population is 21.5 million. So who are those vaccinations going to go to?
And so, yeah, and that's what we were talking about. I think that was Doc's point, was that, you know, you're talking about a million doses. And remember, it requires two doses to be effective.
Right.
Yeah, but wow.
Right. It does.
So we talk, when you talk about the entire United States of America, how many people are we talking about?
Well, it's a real small number compared to the population, and again they told us that this would be a December deal. It's really going to start having an impact on getting the vaccines out next year, beginning in January through March, to get those most vulnerable inoculated, and then the general public should be inoculated sometime around June or July of next year.
Okay.
Well, but newly elected President Biden has already said that amongst his first acts is going to call for 100 days of mask wearing, and we know about how that's going to play in those states that have defied the deal to wear masks already. So, let's hope and pray that folks think that not wait on a vaccine and start taking some preemptive measures such as wearing your mask and social distancing right now.
Is he going to be inaugurated next month? We'll wait and see.
Of course he is. On January 20th, he'll be there. He'll be inaugurated. And the guy that's occupying the White House now will have to leave on the 19th. So, it'll be, I'm sure, a smooth transition of, bulldozers and things. But, life goes on, and Biden has been elected, and they just confirmed a count again in Georgia, that Biden won Georgia. And, the now the attention is turned to the runoff for the Senate seats in Georgia. So we're going to take a break here, and we'll be back after this musical selection. Happy Saturday, everybody, and welcome to the Empowerment Hour.
The new Praise 107.9, the ultimate gospel experience.
welcome back to the Empowerment Hour. This is Larry Williams, along with Dr. Richard Danforth and Jarman Leitner. We're having a discussion about many things going on in Jacksonville and in the state of Florida and beyond. There's, you know, everything begins local, but at the end of the day, it still amounts to things that affecting our lives nationally and regionally. And, you know, one of the things that we wanted to make sure that our listeners were aware of is that, you know, post-COVID, what is that going to look like? And are you preparing yourself individually for the new normal, so to speak? And mm-hmm. when I'm talking about that, we're having a discussion off air really about the types of jobs that are going to be available post COVID and even now as things start to change, the use of technology is heightened and the ability to communicate and make business happen. You know, technically is virtually is now becoming the norm versus what we had in the past. Jarman and Dr. Danforth, what type of jobs and opportunities are we looking at losing and what are possible replacements for those jobs?
Many of those service jobs in the service industries are going to be affected post COVID-19. And I understand that there has been some money within the CARES Act that's being used for community colleges and nonprofits to develop training programs that will develop plumbers and accountants, nurses, people who are into coding, you know, so some of those janitorial jobs, you know, working in the hotels and service jobs like that, they are going to go away and some of them may not come back. So they're trying to, it appears as though the government is trying to get prepared for that and preparing people for these industries. So we have to stay aware of what's going on in our industry, number one, and then see if we need to start making a transition so that we will have job security post COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Danforth, you come across a lot of folks over at the Urban League and your staff, anyways, you know, folks looking for jobs and you're helping them, matching them with potential employers. Have you seen an uptick over there as far as folks trying to transition from, you know, one industry or career to the other?
Well, not a lot of people. What we're seeing is people are trying to survive. We know that some of the jobs that we currently have will not come back, and people will have to retool themselves.
Yes.
But they have not been in the job market prior to COVID-19. Just think about having to acquire those skills rapidly in order to put yourself in a position that you can take advantage of these new jobs that are coming down the pipe. So
we got yes.
A lot of work to do. People are very, it's COVID. Have people where they're only thinking about where the next dollar is coming from.
Yes.
Well, even speaking on behalf of as a small business owner, you know, having to get yourself equipped, you know, for the digital industry that we're in and needing resources and funding in order to prepare yourself and set yourself up for that. So there are even challenges for small businesses to establish themselves to be ready to compete in the market when it comes to all the digital methods that we're
right.
using.
And you know, it's you know, I think a lot of folks on both sides of the deal are hoping that and praying that we can come out of this with a positive. And I think the positive out of this is really the is shown through the flexibility and the willingness of our workforce and our employers to adapt. you know, immediately when the opportunities for office workers shifted to working from home, you know, folks embraced it. And a lot of large companies now have found that, you know, working from home with their employees is not as destructive to the business and the organization as they feared first, because they initially folks thought that, especially employers, that folks wouldn't do the same due diligence at home that they do in the office.
We're going to go ahead and take our next music break, and when we come back, we can continue our conversation. And this is the Empowerment Hour on Praise 107.9. We'll be back.
The ultimate gospel experience, the new Praise 107.9.
Everybody, and welcome back to the Empowerment Hour. This is Larry Williams, along with Dr. Richard Danford over at the Jacksonville Urban League and John Leitner, Harvest Mental Health Services. Hey, guys, it's again, I want to just take this opportunity. This is the holidays, and whether we, whatever our situations are, we're in at home, in the office, whatever we're doing, let's just give thank you to God for this opportunity to be here another day and another chance to, you know, get it right with God, and especially in this COVID 19 era that we are having to live through right now. And I know at the end of the rainbow, there's you know, a golden pot waiting on us, and we just have to withstand be versatile in our moving forward and how we accept in this virus, and make sure that we stay safe, wear your mask, social distance, and don't wait on that vaccine. It's not the cure-all, everybody, okay? Right. There's a lot of things we don't know about it, and there's some things that we will be learning about it as we move forward. But we want to talk about Lot J right now, and that has, you know, we've been talking about this ad nauseum, and quite frankly, you know, we were expecting to have some council members on, and they are busy already scheduled with interviews talking about Lot J and what's going on. And the vote again was postponed until this coming Tuesday because of council members who are unsettled about, you know, the transparency of the project and also the rapidity that, you know, is being insistent upon getting this thing through. And it just reminds me of JEA all over again. What do you guys think?
Right.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that we would follow COVID-19 with JEA. It's just a bad, it was a bad deal there. And we're talking about the lack of transparency. It seems that we're focused on whether Lot J is a good thing or it's not a good thing. And I don't believe that I'm really that interested in whether it's a good thing or not. What I'm interested in is that the community has an opportunity to provide some input on this. It's just disheartening that the mayor can make all of these decisions, I mean, major decisions, that smack of the lack of transparency, and the expectation is that the council will just pass it, and you know, I'm hoping that they're not bobbing and weaving, and pushing to have a vote, and I just don't understand how the council and some of the members of the city council who were fortunate enough to receive funding from the mayor, either with the stimulus or with community development block grant money. I'm talking about council members receiving city funding, and then they're going to vote on a $200 million package, you know, for a developer. So I'm not talking about whether it's a good deal or a bad deal. I'm saying it's a bad deal if there's no community input.
So Dr. Danforth, it sounds like, you know, with these two big projects, you know, JEA and now Lot J, there was not enough community involvement, and our listeners need to know that they have a right to be involved in the projects that are taking place in their community. They have a right to have a say so and have a voice in that. And so that's what it sounds like that you're saying. Where is the community involvement? You know, make this more transparent so that everybody can be more so on the same page whether this project goes through or not. But that's ultimately up to the city council now, correct? That's correct. Up to their vote. Okay.
Well, and I guess, you know, the main thing, you know, my view is that, you know, I think that the expansion project is needed. That we, you know, let's face it, anything that we can do to revitalize downtown Jacksonville and make it more tourist friendly and user friendly as well, you know, is going to help the city. And that means more tourism and other things that
more jobs
and more jobs
in the whole right.
But our, you know, my thing is that these are good things for Jacksonville. What we need to know, though, is what is the taxpayer liability on this deal, and also the transparency of it. If it's a good, clean project, we do not need to rush it. You know, we can should be having these meetings beforehand. And again, it just reminds me of the same process that we went through with JEA, and I just can't get that out of my mind. You know, the rush to implement the loan program or whatever they had going over there at JEA. And in hindsight, everybody was saying, oh, see, you know, we knew we should have challenged it. But here we are again with the same opportunity to challenge it and a project that's not, in our estimation anyways, transparent. So let's demand that transparency. And our leadership in the city owes it to us.
Yes.
So we're going to leave Lot J right there, because I think that, we can talk ad nauseum, and hopefully next week on our show we'll have someone from the city, a city councilor or thereof. If they don't, well, whether they vote on it Tuesday or not, pass it or not on Tuesday, I think they still need to have some more community input. But, our voices seem to not matter when it comes to those types of decisions.
Right. Well,
now moving on, there's a lot of things going on, across the city. We have the holidays and things that's coming up, and, folks are starting to feel, somewhat, pandemic fatigued. And, it carries on to our personal lives. And John, one of the things that all of us talk about off air is the mental effect of what's going on in not just with the adults, dealing with the, lack of being able to pay the rent and things. We're talking about kids who are and teachers who are obligated to attend schools without knowing whether there are infections waiting on them daily. How are people adapting to the mental strain that COVID is presenting us?
Well, first I want to start this and kind of back up a little bit, because you mentioned pandemic fatigue. Also, the holiday season brings on a lot of depression because, remembrance of loss of loved ones. But, the patients who we see over at Harvest Intervention Services, they are seeking services in their time of distress, in this time of high anxiety, in the time of where they have heightened fears, and they need support to deal with it. And so we have a lot of people who come to us, adults and children, entire families who need counseling in order to help support them and provide some coping strategies and some acceptance. I mean, some things you just have to learn to accept. So people at this time, if you are in need, if you are aware of how you're feeling and some of the things that you're doing, or even some of the negative thoughts, there is help and support out here for you, and we are accepting patients at Harvest Mental Health Services. So if you have any questions or concerns, you can give us a call at 904-595-6516 or visit our website at harvestinterventions.com.
So John, people are actually coming into your office. Do they have to, COVID is still out here.
No, we are not having in-office visits, Larry. We are all virtual with our counseling appointments.
Okay.
So no one is coming in the office. So it's very convenient, so you can be at home or even on your work break and receive a counseling session.
All right, great. So now we're having the break. This is Praise 107.9, the Empowerment Hour. Back after this music selection.
The new Praise 107.9, the ultimate gospel experience. The ultimate gospel experience.
With a tail as big as voice as big as the sea. With a voice as big as the sea.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Empowerment Hour. It's Larry Williams, along with Dr. Richard Danford and Jarman Leitner. And this is our final segment of the show. And as always, it's our education segment. And we welcome in Daryl Willie, the DCPS, Duval County Public School Board member and vice chair, I believe. The new vice chair of the congratulations and always welcome to the Empowerment Hour. We always have provide good information to us about what's going on with the schools and the district. So again, happy Saturday and what's going on at DCPS. I understand that there are some new things, but I'm more concerned right now with the what is the rollback or the outcomes from the Thanksgiving holiday deal and how students came back and was there an impact, COVID impact from that vacation?
Yeah, that's a good question. And as always, thanks for having me on. And the reason I'm vice chair of the board is because I was empowered based on this hour every Saturday. To take on that responsibility.
I love it.
But honestly, a lot's going on in our schools. Of course, that was what we talked about last time was the holiday, sort of the Thanksgiving break and people coming back in. We didn't see huge outbreaks in our schools when folks came back. We saw sort of a steady number. We're seeing cases every day, every week. Those are steady. I mean, we see them, but I think the Department of Health, as well as our district, is doing a great job in hitting those things early. So contact tracing early. Even the COVID dashboard is much more up to date than it's ever been. I know that was a big sort of concern at the beginning. So now that's much more real time than it was. Every night at 8 p.m., that's updated. So it'll give you real time updates at 8 p.m. every day about what the what that looks like. So we're actually pleased with it. I think what we're trying to do now is balance a lot of what we're seeing. It comes to the head when we're in athletics, because in athletics, you don't necessarily wear the PPE. So, for example, basketball is on right now. So we're being very cautious around, hey, let's make sure students, if they're having symptoms, they get tested, because in that environment, you're not necessarily social distancing. You don't have a mask on. So those athletic activities are ones where we're monitoring very closely. But we seem to be doing okay. And I think we'll have about 12 more days of physical school days, and then we'll have another break, a longer break that we'll all brace for.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and John, you had some information that you were trying to get further explanations on from Board Member Willie.
Yes, we see that there is a new emergency order from the Florida Department of Education that mandates a type of intervention for any struggling student. So, Daryl, can you explain a little bit more about what that means, a mandated intervention? Because I know the article that reported tutoring services and Saturday schools and kind of thought some of those things were already going on. So what additional intervention needs to be implemented?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up. So we're in the midst of, we did sort of our first round of assessments throughout the year to kind of get a sense of where we are as far as academically with all of our students. And what we found was we had some students who didn't even get to take the assessment because they weren't engaged as much as they needed to be online. So this is really focusing on those students who are online in that Duval homeroom environment, who aren't engaged, who are struggling a bit, and whose grades are lower than that C. So if you're in that DF range in your grades, you're going to get that notification as a parent to say, hey, you need to push your student back into brick and mortar. And it's not just one bad grade. It's like a trend that folks are seeing. So if we're seeing a trend where folks aren't logging in, they're not engaged, they're not getting the grades, then we feel it's our responsibility as a school and school district to put them in the right environment. And the only way we can do that is to see them face to face. And it's tough because I know some parents are choosing that because they have to, but we also need to make sure students are learning. So it's that really tough balance. And that came down from the governor and sort of that state level. But we've been doing those things. You mentioned tutoring. We've had Saturday school for the first every weekend, pretty much beyond holiday weekends. There's been Saturday school at many of the schools in around our district. There is extra tutoring that folks are doing, pulling students in and out of small groups. So this is just an addition to that to ensure that students are being successful.
So what do we do for those parents who still have that challenge, though? They're like, okay, I'm not going to bring them back, you know, and it's hard for me to keep up with their virtual, but, you know, they're really set on their health and safety, you know, so what happens to that child? They need an additional intervention in the home. So how do we handle that?
Yeah, and those can be handled on a case-by-case basis. If those parents are communicating that to us as a district, or those principals or the leaders in that school, then they can make accommodations. So that would be a win if we can get in and have that conversation with a parent and say, hey, here's my situation. Here's why we're struggling. The principals are doing a really phenomenal job of providing extra time after hours. I know there's teachers who are staying on after hours and whatnot. So there are options. So this is sort of the blanket sort of high level option, but on a case by case basis, if there's someone who really says, you know what, I need to stay, but I know we've been struggling, here are the things that we're going to put in place, we can help. The school and school district can help do that.
All right. And again, to our listeners, if you're a parent, you know, you have to communicate with your teachers and the principals and let them know your situation. You know, unless you let them know, they don't understand that you can't help your child virtually as much as you would like to, but you are very concerned about their health and well-being and you don't want to bring them in brick and mortar. So reach out and let them know your situation if that's you. And sounds like the DCPS will do their best to accommodate.
And you know, I think some of the things that are important, and at least across the country now,
that we'll be making some changes in D.C. Come January 20th. But one of the things that President-elect Biden has said that he would ask everyone to wear masks would be one of the first things that he does in his deal. But at the public school, Daryl, are you all requiring masks at schools now already or not?
We are. So that's a mandate inside of the school and school buildings is a mask and social distancing as much as possible. So we're already doing that. I think we talked about this before. The schools are probably some of the safest places you can be. I mean, you got sanitizer, you got masks, you got shields, you got spacing, you got all that stuff, and you got people monitoring it. But what happens is folks go home or before they get on the bus and when they're just hanging out at the park. Those are the things that happen, and then it slips up. So we're not finding cases are starting in the schools. If we're finding that they get to school, we do a temperature check, and we're like, ooh, okay, you need to step over to the side because it happened over the weekend or it happened overnight when you're hanging out with folks. So I think it's a good move. I think if we can all just do that, kind of have that same level of protection everywhere, I think we'd see this thing subside a lot faster.
Hey, Daryl,
I agree with you that the research and so forth confirms your analysis. There is that most of the infections now are occurring at home. And we need to focus on that and again, making sure that our kids, because once they're out of sight, they don't necessarily follow the rules and masking up is one of those important things, whether you're on the playground or at home. So those are good points.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to ask is, that we currently have 170 murders here in we're way up from last year. As a matter of fact, the last 3 years, we're increasing the murder rate as opposed to going the other way. What impact are we seeing? Any impact on the children that attend school? And we're probably running out of time, but just wanted to know if that just being in this crime situation impacting their learning. Maybe that's
And I'll mention one thing real quick because I know we don't have tons of time, but I think you're spot on, and Dharma can attest to this too. The mental health situation in the moments we're in right now is so paramount. We have to do more to take care of our kids. I know we're doing something on December 8th, the school district. It's like a Zoom call with students and some teachers just around the mental health piece and kind of how to, as a parent, do some of that. I know Dharma would be a wonderful person to kind of speak. But next time I'm on, I'd love to talk more about just that. Because it's real, and we're a people who there's a stigma around mental health and pieces, but now more than ever, there is anxiety. Either folks don't want to get sick, they don't want to go outside their house, and then a lot of stuff is happening online. So it definitely affects our kids, either directly or their parents, or it spills over to them from their parents. So that's a huge topic. I'm glad you brought it up, and I'd love to talk more about that.
We can talk about that more next Saturday. This is the Empowerment Hour. Thank you, Daryl, again, and congratulations to Superintendent Diane Green again for being the Superintendent of the Year in
That's
the state
right.
of Florida.
That's right.
Clap for her. And right. We'll see everybody next Saturday morning on the Empowerment Hour, 8 a.m. Thanks.
All right. Have a wonderful weekend.
Peace.